This is Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy, the art of attracting, acquiring, and retaining talent. Here's Kathleen.
Welcome back to my conversation with positive psychology play coach, Jeff Harry. Now, Jeff, let's circle back to the Great Resignation. We're finding that job seekers are now job shoppers. They're looking up companies online, on social media, and reading reviews about them before even applying for the job there. So I'm curious, what companies have made this shift so that people feel comfortable and safe about how they show up to work? And how are they communicating it through social media to attract the right talent to their organizations?
Yes, I talk a lot about this company, Gravity Payments. Dan Price is the CEO. He got famous from making the minimum salary of $70,000 a year, and a lot of CEOs scoffed at him back in 2015. Well, what was interesting was during the pandemic, no one got laid off. And the reason why people didn't get laid off is because they had realized, because he had went out of his way to make sure that everyone got a fair wage, that people were willing to take pay cuts so that no one had to leave the organization. So when you're doing things like that, when your CEO is speaking truth to power and talking about what are the ways in which now to recruit, like, you know, I remember he recently posted a tweet where he's just like, you know, people are claiming that, you know, it's really hard to find staff. We have so many applications right now. Why? Because we pay a living wage, you know. This is not a recruitment issue. This is a pay issue as well as a culture issue. I just wrote an article around how toxic masculinity drove the Great Resignation. And in it, you see, or I highlight, there are many organizations that still celebrate toxic leadership, that are still, you know, trying to get back to pre-pandemic normals. And the more you see that in like an organization like Gravity Payments, an organization like Zappos that Tony Hsieh used to run, and you look at their social media and look how they talk about their staff and how their staff talk about them, right? And there's also a willingness to admit when they make mistakes. That is where you actually see, especially Gen Z applicants looking into those places, because these are organizations that have the humility to admit that they have gotten it wrong and are being open about how they're trying to fix it. Other organizations that are kind of keeping it quiet, that's when you start seeing many more Glassdoor reviews just ripping, you know, them apart.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing I get more pushback on is, you know, while, you know, this crazy pandemic, it accelerated this trend of remote work, and everybody thought, hey, this is great. I'm far more productive. We've known this for 30 years in our organization. But so many people had trouble embracing it. And even as things are starting to open up now, we are being asked to give more presentations to organizations about the value of keeping the workplace remote or moving to a hybrid workplace. But people, some leaders are just still so resistant to this.
Yeah.
And it's all around not trusting their employees.
Exactly. And if you are not only not trusting your employees and you need them back in the office, but you are also using software to spy on them when they're working at home, there's your problem right there. There's your problem. Mm-hmm. You don't have respect for your employees. So why then do you think they would respect you? Why do you think they're leaving in droves? I've seen posts from some recruiting firms that are like, yeah, as soon as I hear about a company forcing their staff back to work, we start recruiting from that company. We start just picking off staff because they realize there's going to be an outflow of staff because they may not want to do it. And this is what I'm talking about around that, like, fixed mindset rigidity. You need to be right next to me babysitting sort of way. That is poor leadership right there, because what you're saying is that even though you're more productive, even though you have a higher job satisfaction, even though you're more joyful doing the work at home, and probably we're saving money, and you are saving money because you are not commuting as much anymore, I'm going to take that all back because I feel uncomfortable because I don't know what to do as a manager because you're not sitting next to me. That shows like weakness. That shows a certain level of like inadequacy as a leader.
Are you finding that there is some way to baptize these, some of these leaders who don't trust that, or is it just part of their DNA that they, no matter what happens, they're never going to trust?
Well, I think you have to call them out on their BS. Why do people need to be back in the office? What are the benefits, right? And say it in an open, curious way. Like, please, no, explain to me, how they can be more productive. Give us reasons why it would actually make sense for them to be back in the office. Give me the pros and cons of, what actually gets done in the office that currently is not getting done at home. And if they don't have answers to that, then be like, why are you then so obsessed with getting everyone back in there? I think we need to challenge leadership. I think a lot of times we kind of tiptoe around it. What was it? I recently was talking to someone that was getting recruited from a tech company. And with that tech company, they were dealing with an issue because one of their C-suite executives had been accused of a certain level of, sexual harassment, right? So what was the organization doing? A lot of people were having meetings around how to not make this person uncomfortable. They were building their whole organization or doing all this work to make sure this person who caused the problem, not more discomfort. And everyone else had to like walk around on eggshells. Why are we celebrating or building around this toxicity instead of addressing it directly? Because it's affecting so many people. Sherm did a study back in 2019 that found that toxicity in the workplace, especially toxic leaders in the workplace, had cost organizations $223 billion over the last 5 years. And these were the only organizations willing to admit that there was toxicity at work, right? So we have to like relook at what type of leadership are we celebrating and start celebrating a much more balance of feminine and masculine leadership that is built off of both decisiveness, but also empathy, compassion, and shared humanity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the answer to the question of because we've always done it that way is probably not a good one, right?
Well, it's like, how's that work? That whenever I hear that now, I go, well, how's that working out for you?
Yeah.
How is 2020 and 2021 doing what you've always done, right? Like, do you not realize we just went through a once in a century moment, right? And I think a lot of people don't even realize, like, if you look back at history, when, the last pandemic happened, around the 1920s, what also happened during that time? Industries were forced at that moment to implement the 8-hour workday, to implement the 40-hour work week. A lot of, and it started with Henry Ford, but he was like forced into it because they realized it just didn't make sense to be exploiting their workers that way. We need that level of innovation again, whether that is us figuring out how we can, if people are coming back to the office, how you can provide childcare at the office. I believe Hewlett-Packard did that. It could look like a 4-day work week as Microsoft in Japan did and found that their staff was 40% more productive. We have to be rethinking the way in which not only we measure our metrics, but how we actually do our work going forward. As studies have found that most staff can only do deep work for 4 hours of a day. But they're still there for 8 hours. So what are they doing with the other 4 hours? Not a lot of great work. So how do we maximize the deep work that they're doing so that we can get the most out of them while also having them feel more job satisfaction?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So you mentioned difficult conversations a little earlier. Mm-hmm. And you and I have a mutual friend, Eric Bailey.
Oh, yes.
And he talks about how we go into difficult conversations in two ways, right? Either one, we go in to understand what's going on, or two, we go into that conversation to be right.
Yep. To win.
Yep. Yeah. And so, we talk about navigating these difficult conversations. How can play help us deliver some of these difficult messages?
So I think play can help in ways such as first identifying that the problem is not within each individual. The problem is separate. Almost like when I run my Navigating Difficult Conversations workshop, we have an actual stuffed animal scapegoat. And we're like, this is the problem. It's over here. And we channel our energy towards this ridiculous stuffed animal, like all of our anger and resentment. Because a lot of times the reason why difficult conversations are so hard is because we feel as if we're attacking the individual instead of addressing the problem. So that's one way, like separating the problem from the two individuals or from the team, right? Another way, and we do this a lot, is we start our workshops by having debates about things that are not as important. Even, you know, I'm on a book club with Eric Bailey, and we had a whole debate on whether people like their fries crunchy or soft, right? So you pick an innocuous, really small debate and then have that debate, and then you switch sides and you put yourself in the shoes of the other person. You start arguing from their standpoint. And when we go through that process of priming and feeling what it's like to be in someone else's shoes when we're having that conversation, and we do that enough times, because a lot of times the challenge with difficult conversations is we don't have enough practice. You think about a football team, they practice all week for a three-hour game. We get no practice at work. We just are thrown into this difficult conversation. So the more we can practice with innocuous conversations first, right, and try both sides, then when we finally get to a more tougher issue and do that same method of being like, all right, I need you to argue for the other side just so you understand how they feel, then all of a sudden you start to see a certain level of empathy and compassion that you didn't see before. So a lot of this is about priming, and a lot of this is about practice, and a lot of it is this is about sitting in the awkwardness of the difficult conversation, being like, hey, we're gonna get through this because both of our goals is understanding and not to win.
It's interesting that you say it. You know, I think it is important to really identify what that issue is or what that problem is. And I think practicing, as you said, with, you know, about what's better, which is the better French fry, right? Mm-hmm. You make it sound so easy, Jeff.
Oh, it's hard. It's painful. It's hard. It's painful. And the other thing, and I'm about to do this for a SHRM chapter. In the presentation I'm putting together, I'm saying, like, it's not all in one conversation. I think we build up that we're like, all right, I haven't spoken to this person for over a month, or I haven't seen them face to face, and now I'm going to win, and I'm going to get everything that I always wanted in this 1 hour conversation. And you're like, why are you setting yourself up for failure? You know, this is something that takes months, if not potentially years of having a hard conversation, feeling awkward, coming back into the room and having it again, and each time showing up with a certain level of compassion and understanding that both of you are coming from a good place. And I think that's a really important aspect of it, because a lot of times when we go in, we have villainized the other person and we have made ourselves the hero. And the more we can call ourselves out on that BS and be more like, okay, I really want to understand where you're coming from, but I still disagree with you, that's when we can start to have stronger connections. And when you get through it, your team is so much more strong because of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and you have people like me who would much rather, you know, I like everyone being happy and joyful in their little neighborhood. And I think you make a really good point that this isn't a one and done type of a conversation. And for somebody like me who wants everybody to be happy and, you know, all rainbows and unicorns, right, to realize that sometimes these take 4, 5, 6, because again, it gets back to that T word, trust.
Yeah.
And what do I have to do to rebuild the trust because of something that I've done to stub my toe?
Right, right. And also, in order to experience the high highs, you have to also be able to experience the low lows, right? I talk a lot around toxic positivity, which is a really, you know, like where we're always trying to smooth things over, but then we can't have the hard conversation. Then we can't, then people don't feel like they can speak up at meetings. And think about it, like, I think I read this study a while back of like C-suite executives that weren't the top leaders, but were like right underneath, wouldn't share like 80% of their best ideas because they just did not trust their leaders. So we are currently using products that are not the best products in the world because people weren't willing to speak up, right? We have mediocre products of everything that we have because of that issue, right? So we need to be realizing like, the difficult conversations actually can be fun because you're digging, you're getting into like the good stuff, but the reality is it's messy. It's really messy. But part of that mess is where all the innovation actually comes from. And when you're trying to smooth things over all the time, then you are not allowing for uniqueness to show up. As Marcus Buckingham would say a lot of times, like you're not allowing people to show their spikes, and that's who they are. And when you allow them to show who they are, all of a sudden they start to bring up ideas that you would have never thought of otherwise. But when we don't allow for those conversations to happen, you are almost quelling that play. You are quelling their uniqueness. And then they end up just mailing it in and just sitting silent on meetings. And we don't see that level of engagement that you need in order to be innovative.
I completely agree with you. You have also said that, and this kind of gets to your comment that you just made about, you know, ideas that you would not have ever thought of. And you said that if you don't have a mentor under the age of 25, you're going to miss out on a lot of learning. I heard you say that and I thought, amen, brother. And I've said this on my podcast before, never in a million years would I have ever hired a college graduate or somebody who had just been out of school 3 or 4 years. And in the last year, that's probably been the majority of our workforce that we've hired. And what they have taught me about running a company and what people really are looking for in their job is nothing short of a PhD.
Yeah. Yeah. Gen Z is not playing around. Like, if anything, they are motivating a lot of millennials and Gen Xers to be like, whoa, I can demand that? Wait, I can just leave my job? Like, they are driving the resignation in many ways because they're like, why are y'all tolerating this? We're not going to tolerate this. And it's fascinating to note because there's so many things that are changing from like cryptocurrency to NFTs to, you know, I spend a lot of time on TikTok and I've learned so much about what Gen Z wants in their next job and what they're not willing to tolerate anymore. I mean, a lot of people on TikTok knew about the Great Resignation before it started happening, before people started even reporting it in regular news, right? So that I think is important. Having said that quote though, I also do not want to discount the fact that if you're under 25, getting a mentor that, you know, is over 40 is also as important, right? Is that we both need to be learning intergenerationally. Heck, even from people that have retired, I don't think we value senior citizens enough because they all have lessons that they can teach us about how to do our work in a better way, right? And how to bring more humanity to, you know, our working lives. If we're devoting potentially 2,000 to 2,500 hours of our year to our work, you know, shouldn't we be not only connecting with many different generations and understanding how they did it so that we learn from the lessons and the mistakes that they made? And I think that's really important going both ways, that we start to have more of those conversations and start to be like, all right, you know, you're the youngest person in this team. We're going to ask you a bunch of questions about what you think we're doing wrong. And then we can turn to, you know, maybe like, you know, some of the boomers that are there and be like, what is your take? And have that debate between the Gen Zer and the boomer, just so you could learn from both standpoints. So I think that is a really important conversation that we need to have more.
I think so too, especially because as a boomer, the whole technology piece is still something that we are challenged by. And it's like, what do you mean TikTok? I just don't have time for that, right? But if you don't take that time, you're not going to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. And look at the organizations that did make time. The Washington Post, the boring Washington Post, gave this one guy, one of their writers, a certain amount of time to start messing around on TikTok during the pandemic. Why do most Gen Zers now know the Washington Post more than they know the New York Times, the LA Times, or any other news publication? So, you know, the willingness to experiment. Sometimes, even as a leader, you just need this, you know, play-oriented willingness to experiment and be open to the failure. You know, the Buffalo Bills hired these two kids to basically make their TikToks, and they gave them a whole floor to do it, and the Buffalo Bills became like, had the largest following on TikTok, again, during the pandemic. So we need to just be open to trying things out and failing, and sometimes being okay with celebrating in the failure. Heck, even in a difficult conversation, we should be okay with it not going well. That's part of the process, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and the more we're willing to be like, wow, well, that didn't go well, but we're willing to come back into the room and have it again, you know, and each time we're going to try to be more and more open, that's when we allow ourselves to be, and I hate this word because you keep hearing it all the time, but actually be more authentic, because you're allowing the messiness to come out. This, mm-hmm. None of this is clean, right? You know, companies don't run on Instagram posts. Yeah, you know, that's right. that vision of, like, you know, when you go to their website and everyone's high-fiving in that stock photo, that's not real. Right. So the more we can be real, I just made a TikTok about this where I mocked job descriptions versus the reality of the office. And in job descriptions, a lot of times it's like, this is a fast paced, high octane work environment. And then you like look in the environment, it's just like cubicles for like miles, you know, like, mm-hmm. Is it really? So the more we can be honest, that actually is refreshing, especially to a lot of Gen Zers.
Well, I've actually started ending my conversation with, you know, I'm going to apologize in advance, because as hard as I'm going to try not to do this again, I probably will. And I, you know, so I'm going to apologize
like
in advance.
I like it.
So I understand that there are a couple of holidays during the year. One is National Fun at Work Day, which was January 28th, and the International Fun at Work Day, which was April 1st. And I'm wondering, what are some of the ways that you see companies celebrate this day?
Yeah, so this is tough. So I made like a slew of TikTok videos and YouTube videos about this, right? If your work environment is currently toxic, you should not force fun. Forced fun is not play. And I want to be very clear about that, because like a lot of times people are like, hey, wait a minute. So our staff hasn't been getting along, so let's put them all into an escape room and see if they can get out of it. You know, and you're like, well, Samantha and Chad are not going to like each other after this if they didn't like each other before this. And now you've put them in a room where they can't get out. Right. So we leaders first have to look at it that way, where it's like, if I haven't first built a safe space for people to play, because play can be vulnerable, right? Like, some people are like, well, I don't want to play at work because I don't want to show people who I am, right? And we should respect that. So we first have to identify, have we built the trust to even play at work? So then if we are allowing that, then my thing is all about not so much encouraging people to be like, hey, let's go play ping pong or pickleball or something like that. It's more about, how do you create the playground so that people feel safe enough to play on their own time? So what I mean by that is, like, for example, give them time. Cancel unnecessary meetings. That would be really great. Give your staff more autonomy so that they can actually do work the way they want to do it. when you're approaching a new project, instead of being like, hey, everyone, let's do it the way we've always done it, be like, listen, everyone, instead of us having a meeting, we're going to brainstorm all these ways. I want you to find your team, you know, or you can work alone, but I want the best ideas in how we can solve this problem in a brand new way, because we've been doing it the same way and it keeps coming up over and over again. When you give your staff that autonomy and that time and their ability to be like, hey, what is the work that you love to do? How do we figure out a way in which you can do more of that work? Oh, you love to write? Can you help us write our newsletter coming out? Oh, you love to make videos? We've never made a TikTok video before or a YouTube video before. Can you help come up with some ideas for that? When you're giving them that playground to actually now shine, even what you did when you were like, during the pandemic, you had one of your staff cooking, he or she got to show off who they are. And it had nothing to do with work, but it probably made other people more productive at work because they were like, oh, that was so nice that, you know, that they were allowed to do that. Maybe I want to do something like that. And they get more motivated because because you're showing that you actually care. So that's what I mean by playing at work is how are you creating the playground? How are you showing your languages of appreciation so that your staff feel seen, heard, and connected?
So bottom line is that every day should be fun at work day, right?
If you've created the trust to do it, yes. I believe that. Because I believe play is as crucial as like eating, sleeping, and breathing. Because when you think about it at the end of your life, what do you think of most? You think of your fun, joy, play moments, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that, you know, make it worthwhile. If I'm going to be at work for 2,500 hours in a year, wouldn't you as a leader want to create more fun, joy, play moments for your employees?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Jeff, I've really enjoyed our conversation and gosh, I have sure learned a lot. Can you tell us a little bit about your website and some of the resources on it that our listeners can access?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is rediscoveryourplay.com. There I have a slew of videos on how you can build more psychological safety through play, how you can navigate more difficult conversations through play. And also if you click the Let's Play button, we can have a conversation on how we can infuse more play into the workplace so your staff love coming back to work.
Great. Well, it's been a fantastic conversation and I'm definitely looking forward to staying in touch with you, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Oh, can't wait.
And that's it for this episode of Revolutionizing Recruitment. I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, make sure you take a second to subscribe so you automatically get my new shows when they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I'd love if you've left me a review so more people like yourself can discover the show. Until next time, take care.
This has been Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy. To connect with Kathleen or to learn more about recruitment research, go to duffygroup.com.